Isn't life an adventure? Oh, have you ever just sat down and relaxed and gone inside who you are and felt how relaxed you can be? Well, as you're listening to this show, I just want you to go there for right now. I'm pulling the picture of maybe going on a hike, walking down an animal trail, and the heat of the day is radiating off the beautiful grass. And the shrubs turn into sagebrush, and the earth is red, and it has a dusty quality about it that clings to your shoes, to your boots, to your socks. And the heat of the day radiates up and fills your mind with all kinds of thoughts. As your feet hit the trail, one step after another, it comes up and harmonizes with the rhythm of your heart. Breathe in the air and close your eyes and pretend where you're walking is totally fine. And before you know it, ouch, you stub your toe on a stone. And you open your eyes and lift your head, and before you stands a wall of stone, neatly stacked, a curious thing, higher than your head. What is it doing in the middle of the trail that you're on? And questions start to come into your mind. Welcome to Esologic Radio. I'm your host, Patricia Cleveland, and I would like to welcome you to an adventure of finding out a little bit more about yourself, nature, and maybe how it all works together to make life better for everything and everybody. The adventure of walking down a trail and being confronted by a mysterious wall of stone kind of challenges the mind, the programmed thought of, oh, it's just a wall of stone. The logical self would say, oh, walk on. But the self within, the core, the essence, heart of who you are, says, hey, there is something more here to find out, to discover, and maybe to help me understand how and why I am here. Today, I have the great pleasure of having a wonderful conversation with Michael Tellinger. Now, Michael's books have been sitting on my coffee table. He has three, and they're kind of my personality test for my guests. I have one book by, it's titled Adam's Calendar. The second book is The Temple of the African Gods. And then the real tricky book is The Slave Species of God. And living in Alabama, when people see the word God spelt with a small g, they tend to back away and go, I don't know if I want to read that. But I read it, and I have to tell you that it inspired me to get mad. It actually inspired me to challenge the process of education that I was exposed to as a child. So Michael is an amazing author. He's got these books full of photography. If anybody would like to buy one and put them on their coffee table, it will spark some really amazing conversations with your guest. Michael's coming to us today from Johannesburg, South Africa. He's an author. He is a very inquisitive mind. He has tried to track down and illustrate the history of man. And his line of thought challenges the timelines that are being taught in the educational establishments. Michael has been involved with all kinds of conversations about energy, archaeology, and civilization. So today, I'd like to say hello, Michael. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks, Patricia. Lovely to be talking to you.
Yes. I hear that you have been busy looking at some of the archaeological data on the stone circles that you have been working with in South Africa. And I was wondering if you could help the listeners understand what it is that your mind has found interesting and really what these stone circles may represent.
Well, you know, you've got to go back a little bit and maybe just give people a bit of a background about the stone circles in South Africa, because they're such an enigma and they've been so misunderstood for so long. And attempts have been made to analyze them by a number of scholars through recent times and then also through relatively historic times, going back about 150 years. That's when the sort of more recent fascination with the stone, circular stone structures in Southern Africa began. unfortunately, what has been happening is that the archaeologists and the historians that have been coming to Southern Africa to look at these structures were using their knowledge of mainstream history as a guideline to try and put some sort of a sense to them. And it was really one particular research archaeologist by the name of Theodore Bent in the late 1800s that really made a huge breakthrough. But unfortunately, just like in all great discoveries, his research and his conclusions were pretty much ignored and shoved aside. And he made very strong connections to ancient civilizations in Southern Africa, to gold mining, vanished civilizations that we know absolutely nothing about. And that information is completely ignored. It's not taught anywhere. And it's probably one of the most exciting bits of archaeological research you'll find anywhere.
And, it seems that there seems to be layers of this information uncoiling. And so this archaeological challenge has been there for in our history, just not really researched from a correct position or a open perspective.
Yeah, you know, one's also got to look at where does archaeology come from, you know, because until very recently, archaeology was really, you know, grave robbing and tomb robbing. It wasn't a civilized profession or a noble profession. It was all about, you know, guys being sent on these exotic missions by wealthy industrialists or colonialists from England or Germany or Europe. On these missions to Africa and the East and the Americas to go and you know, raid tombs and raid the pyramids and find whatever treasures they can and bring it back to Mother England. So they weren't really noble professions, and he who had the deepest pockets would be able to go further and stay there for longer and get more loot and get more treasures to bring back to the funders and those that were funding these extravagant trips around the world, you know, and slowly but surely it's morphed into a more reputable and today, you know, we look at archaeologists and we, you know, when you say archaeologist, people get these images of people that are full of knowledge and information. That's not necessarily so. I must tell you that most of the archaeologists I've met are really very boring people who have boring jobs at universities, and they get stuck in their rut. And the moment you throw a curveball at them, something that's outside of the spectrum of research, they respond with a knee-jerk reaction. And more often than not, they reject it, or they just don't understand it, so they just, you know, don't want to hear about it. Very few of these people are actually brave enough to say, "Wow, this is interesting. Tell me more about what you've done." And I speak from experience here in South Africa. After my three books that you've mentioned, Slave Species of God, Adam's Calendar, and Temples of the African Gods, that clearly outline archaeological, historical, scientific, astronomical research, geophysical research into these stone structures. And I'm going to get into, you know, how big these vanished civilizations really are. But all my research that's been published in three books into these ancient structures here, not one historian, not one archaeologist in South Africa has approached me to find out more about my research, how I've come to these conclusions, to find out more, how do we measure these, the scientific and electronic measurements that we've got to be able to make certain statements and so forth. Not one. In fact, the opposite is true. Whenever these academics are approached by mainstream media or alternative media, or anyone from the media for that matter, and asked about Michael Tillinger and my research, their response is always generally the same. You know, they dismiss me with absolute no regard or zero respect for anything that I've produced, and with a very sort of superior kind of attitude, and it's quite disturbing, and it's very sad, because you know, I look at these people and I go, you're stuck in this great job, you've got no adventure in your life, come let me show you some exciting stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like they can't. I work with animals, and I have done a research program on altering the resonant value of the body and its relationship with structure. And you can show them the pictures, you can show them the data, and they disconnect. It's almost like a challenge. Yeah. And it gets rather annoying, because you want them to, you know, take up the tool that you've offer them, and the next thing you know, it's like they're gone, they shut down, and you're standing there going, now what? And so you have reached out to people with your information. So when you started this, how did you actually get interested in this amazing stuff?
Well, just before I get to that, you mentioned, how your body's energies and that get affected and so forth. This is really interesting, because this is some research that I did more than 2 years ago already in the stone circles with photo emission technology. Professor Karakov, or Dr. Karakov, the Russian scientist that developed this phenomenal. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. He takes the energy, the pictures of the energy coming off structures. Is that right?
Off your fingertips, yeah. Fingertips. And it's a very sophisticated equipment. So, I mean, this is scientifically mind-blowing stuff. And more sort of mainstream physicians and doctors are starting to use it, because it gives them a much greater understanding of what's wrong with their patients. We use these tools to analyze the effect of the stone circles and Adam's calendar on the human body. And I must tell you, it is spectacular, the effect that it has. And that was a great confirmation, because, you know, after the first 3 years of research, when I started getting involved here in 2007 and late 2007 and early 2008, researching these stone structures and then the ancient calendar site that was discovered or rediscovered by Johann Heine, which I then started doing a lot more work on. I ended up calling it Adam's calendar, and that's the name that is stuck now. And so I've had hundreds of psychics and you know, people that have got, that are gifted in metaphysical and psychic abilities and so forth. Alternative energy healers and feelers and so forth. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of them have told me that the stone circles, and especially Adam's calendar, have a phenomenal effect on the human body. And, you know, I just had to accept it and accept their explanations to me, until we eventually had brought the equipment in and we confirmed what these people were telling us. And it's spectacular what it does and how it changes your energy fields in your body and how it affects you.
I was just going to ask, because I am one of those people, and when I saw the pictures out of the African Gods book, the Temple of the African Gods, when I saw those pictures, it resonates so strongly with me that I didn't even have to read the book to say, wow, this is like a whole energy network. And I'm just curious, when people are in the presence of these stone structures, and does it strengthen the aura field? Does it do any type of rebalancing of the system? Able to tell?
It seems to do exactly that. I need to get my friend Konstantin Pavlidis back from London with his machine. He's got a new updated machine, and come and do more measurements and more, more research in the stone structures and do it probably more accurately, if I can call it that. Not that we weren't accurate, but we were having problems with his computer, because the energy fields were so powerful in these stone structures, they would just drain the battery within a few minutes. So it was really a challenge. You know, it takes you 45 minutes to drive up the mountain, and then we spend a few minutes in the stone structures, and then the battery gets drained. When normally his battery lasts for, 3 or 4 hours, within, 10 to 15 minutes, the battery would be dead, and we have to come all the way down the mountain, recharge your battery, go back up. That was the first thing that was just completely out of the ordinary. And then that's when amazing. We got to Adam's calendar to do the measurements at Adam's calendar, completely the opposite happened. The battery would instead of, we were now used to it lasting just, 15, 20 minutes, suddenly we were there working, 2 hours went by, and the battery didn't even budge. It was a very strange, phenomena happening. But just to answer the other question, what does it do to people? Different people have different reactions. When I take people to Adam's calendar, and they enter the sort of circle, the imaginary circle. Now there is no real circle, but it used to be a circular structure. And even on the Google aerial photographs, you can see the remains of what used to be a circular structure. It's so very clearly obvious. The moment you enter that imaginary circle, it has a profound effect on you. Some people just love it. They feel energized, and other people start feeling all kinds of other emotions and energetic effects. Some people want to vomit. Other people, just feel too anxious and they can't stay and they need to get out of there. And so it has a different effect on different people, and that I find quite fascinating.
Yeah, I just share a little here. I did a course with a holistic practitioner, and he had a machine that would send out, it would oscillate, it would shake, vibrate, and you would sit on a chair between two plates, and they would send this oscillating charge through you. Well, I had to stand at the back of the classroom because it just felt like prickles. And I couldn't, and everybody was supposed to take a turn in this piece of equipment. It was supposed to heal or rebalance any of the problems you may have in your energy system. And so they finally got me to sit in this chair. And it made me feel like I was stepping out of my body. And the interesting thing that happened in front of 32 people was they could actually see my aura field, and it was gold. And so this is one of the things that I find really interesting when people move into, I'm going to call them natural frequency generators, their body may be able to resonate because of the content of their mineral or who they are, while other people will step in and they will have these reactions, and it actually will strike you as a detoxification, or that resonant signature doesn't match you. You can't come up to that energy field. And I find that is very, very interesting thing in nature. And so you're experiencing it with these stone circles. Now, yeah. Before we get too far, where are they located?
Well, they're right throughout southern Africa. South Africa, large parts of Botswana, up into across the border into Zimbabwe, and also into Mozambique. And from the accounts of Jan Heine, they go across the Zambezi, which is the northern border of Zimbabwe, into Zambia as well. And, I mean, this is a beautiful country. It's just, you know, this is God's country. It's spectacularly beautiful. And now you've got these spectacular stone structures that are just scattered right across southern Africa. And just to you know, give your listeners an idea how many of them there are, the moment you realize how many they are, you know instantly that we're dealing with a vanished civilization that we know nothing about. And there's a great story that unfolds trying to uncover how vast this vanished civilization is. And it starts with Theodore Bent, once again, you know, in 18...
I'm going to say I didn't look at the clock. I think we could just take and hold it there for a minute and just take a little break, and we'll be back in a minute.
It can happen to you.
Okay, well, that was a nice little break. And we're here with Michael Tellinger, and we're talking about the stone circles that run up the spine of Africa. And Michael, you were going to lead us into a conversation about the ancient civilization and archaeologist Dr. Bent.
Yeah, just to give people an idea how many of these structures there are, because that's a big shock to the system. And you realize that there was huge activity here that we know absolutely nothing about. And the only person that's really taking this to the world is me at this stage. And it's becoming quite interesting to see how the interest has grown over the last 5 years since I've started sharing this information, and where the interest is coming from. The strangest places, you know, it's... For example, the one academic institute in South Africa that invited me to come and do a talk to them was the Faculty of Arabic Theological Studies at the University of South Africa in Pretoria, and they asked me to come and do a presentation to them because they emailed me and said my philosophies and my writings in Slave Species of God. Is very similar, follows very much the patterns of Arabic theology. And I went, oh, that's interesting.
hey, it's a small world. It's just divided by thought.
Yeah, and I just also want to say that, before I forget to mention this, that Slave Species of God has just been re-released under a slightly different name, Slave Species of the Gods, by Inner Traditions, Baron Coe, and it's now widely available in the USA and also in the UK and Australia, if I understand correctly. So that's a big breakthrough, because it's been a struggle to get people to lay their hands on the book. But so that's great news for me, and it's taken a lot of effort for a really good publisher to pick up on my books. So,
well,
back to the numbers.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just to come back to the numbers, in 1895, Theodore Bent estimated that there were about 4,000 of these structures in southern Africa. And that was from horseback, right? Now, that's already a big number, because you've got to realize that southern Africa is always described as a very sparsely populated part of the world. Nothing of consequence ever happened here, according to the mainstream academics. And nothing can be further from the truth, right? When you start seeing what we found here. And then by 1971, around there, Roger Summers, that wrote 3 or 4 books on the ruins in Southern Africa, estimated about 20,000 of these ruins. And, you know, at that stage, when I discovered that, I went, wow, 20,000 stone ruins. That's a large number of ruins. That's, you know, what's going on here? There's a civilization we know nothing about. And then I got involved, and within the first 6 months, I estimated that there were at least 100,000 ruins. And I didn't want to, you know, just thumbsuck the numbers, so I started looking at Google photography and Google areas where they concentrated, and I started counting and extrapolating and getting averages and identifying the clusters of these ruins. And to my utter shock, when I added up what I counted, I came up with close to or just more than 10 million of these stone ruins.
Oh my gosh.
You know, that's just a number that nobody had ever expected. And the moment you figure that out, you know that we're dealing with a vanished civilization that had a vast population, large number of people that lived here for extended periods of time. They built stone circles. They built terraces, because most of Southern Africa is absolutely covered in ancient agricultural terraces. There are just so many of them that, you know, the first thing that crosses your mind when you come across this, you go, okay, well, the one thing I know for sure is that they didn't go hungry, because, you know, there are all these agricultural terraces everywhere. Clearly, they were growing a lot of food. So they were really well looked after, and they certainly weren't starving.
I'm a farmer, okay, so I may ask, like, farmer questions here. Is the terrain mountainous? Is it, are the stones in a valley between mountains, or what is the type of location they're in?
Right across. They're on tops of the mountains, down the side of the mountains, right into the valleys, next to the rivers, up the other side. And they're all connected by these channels that look like roads from aerial photographs. They look like these roads that connect them all together. And but the roads have no entrances. They have no access points and entrances. They're just like connectors that connect every stone circle. There is no stone circle that stands alone. And then the other important thing is that these stone circles are not the same shape. Each and every one is a very unique shape. There is not one. There are no two stone circles that are the same shape, and that took a long time. It's, you know, when I ask the question now, or when I pose this to you, it sounds, oh, okay, that's interesting. But to reach that conclusion has taken how many, you know, 150 years for somebody to say that, hold on, they're all these stone structures built by these people that we know nothing about, and not two of these are identical. How is that possible? Because if you look at, you know, the way we build houses and we build buildings, often they build identically.
So were they building these, I know this is conjecture, but they building these stone circles, because I get them as these emitters, they're emitting earth energy outwards. So were they following maybe a sine wave for the earth and shaping these stone circles to suit the resonance that was coming out of certain areas? I just find the whole thing so amazing.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. And it was what you described there is exactly it's Every stone circle is just the representation of the cymatic pattern, the cymatic shape created by the sound frequency, the resonance of Mother Earth at that particular spot.
Right.
So it's like creating an energetic plug point into planet Earth and being able to use that energy, use that sound frequency and that vibrational resonance as a source of energy. And that's interesting, because that's what Nikola Tesla said, that the earth rings like a bell. And if you know how to tap into that sound energy, that resonance of Mother Earth, you can use that as an infinite source of energy. Because the Earth rings, has a very strong ring. And
when you enjoy looking at alternative archaeology and science, and when you look at the stone circles, and then you start to look at the questioning of the Egyptian history and their technology, and you start to look at some of the structures, even the columns that they've made, they actually mirror the concepts that Tesla put in his technology, which tells me that I think there's a lot of energy in the universe we aren't tapping into. And so you're sitting on this area in South Africa, and this energy resource is working all the time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, this is what we've measured. You know, there can be no more question, no more argument. I've gone and measured the sound frequencies, the electromagnetic waves, the heat signatures, the decibels at which the sound frequencies ring in these stone circles. And we measure these sound frequencies into the gigahertz. And this is, I don't think anywhere else in the world have we ever measured gigahertz sound frequencies. It's unheard of, as far as I know. Electromagnetic fields run really strongly, and some of the stone structures, they run horizontally, creating like a dome-shaped kind of electromagnetic shield over the structure within the stone walls. And then some of them, the electromagnetic field runs out of the ground into the sky inside the stone walls. So there are these two types of flows of energy that we get. And where it gets really exciting is at Adam's calendar, where the energy fields are at least four times as strong as any of the stone circles. The strongest energy fields we've measured in the stone circles are only about a quarter of what we find at Adam's calendar. But between the two calendar stones, the electromagnetic fields run straight out of the ground into the sky, which is like this beam of energy that comes out of the rest of the energy electromagnetic field around it, is horizontal inside the circular structure, creating a dome-shaped effect, you know, of electromagnetic field over Adam's calendar. And then you got this beam of energy coming right out the middle, straight into the sky. Wow. And this is research that started in 2003 with Jan Heiner, when he first spotted the calendar site and realized this is not just some random rock formation. And he came back and he started to measure it and analyzing the solstices and equinoxes, the alignments, and realized that this is a very sophisticated calendar site that you can tell every day of the year exactly with this calendar.
So it's a parallel to Stonehenge, but on a smaller scale. And all the stone, have you tested the stones for their resonant value, like what their harmonics are?
No, we haven't done that. But what we've done is you know, measured, as I said, the electromagnetic frequencies and waves inside Adam's calendar. And it's very clear that it is built specifically for those purposes, having this beam of energy coming out the middle inside of sound frequencies that run into 300 gigahertz. It's just unthinkable.
Very high frequency, isn't it? That's higher than radio waves that we use, the waves we use here for our electricity and everything.
This is incredibly high. That's nothing else on Earth operates at those frequencies. So we're dealing with a very interesting device, and when we measured it, and even after we measured it, I still couldn't quite figure out what it was. You know, what was this calendar all about? And just like Stonehenge, the fact that it's aligned with the equinoxes and solstices and so forth. That's just the built-in feature. That's not the main reason why it's built. You know, Stonehenge is the same thing. Stonehenge, and by the way, for people that still think Stonehenge is a few thousand years old, I can tell you right now categorically, the geology shows us that Stonehenge is way more than probably 500,000, maybe more than 1,000,000 years old. And the geology tells us very clearly that it's that old.
How old is Adam's calendar, do you think?
Well, I put it at 285,000 years, which is in sync and consistent with the origins of humankind and our species on planet Earth. And the reason I do that is because, first of all, it's known by the African shaman and the African knowledge keepers of ancient knowledge and wisdom. It's known as the birthplace of the sun, or Inzalo Yelanga in Zulu. And Inzalo Yelanga means birthplace of the sun. And they believe that this is where humanity was created by the gods. And so when I called it Adam's calendar, just, you know, because I thought it was a very old site, so that name came to mind, I never realized how accurate that name would be in time to come.
Wow. And so you're finding that there's a lot of history in the African folklore and the wisdom keepers, and they're starting to all coalesce and make a solid story for you. I'm just going to hesitate here in moving on to where our next adventure in your conversation takes us, because I think we're going to come up to another break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Michael Tellinger and his amazing stories about the African stone circles, Adam's calendar, and who knows what science is trying to hide from a way we think, feel, and live. We'll be back.
It can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to everyone eventually.
Welcome back to ESO Logic Radio. This is Patricia Cleveland. And anybody who'd like to get in touch with me, you can reach me at bphcleveland@gmail.com, or you can go to my website, which is thebalancedhorseproject.net. With me as my guest today is Michael Tellinger. And Michael, how can people find you?
You can go to my website, michaeltellinger.com. That's michaeltellinger.com. And then also you can check out my liberation movement, my new socio-economic structure that I've been promoting as a result of my research into ancient vanished cultures and civilizations. In 2005, I came up with a concept that I called contributionism, where people exist in a world without money. And it's really lessons that I've learned from my research that I did into the ancient civilizations. What became very clear to me at that stage, Patricia, was that these people lived here for thousands and thousands of years, and they did not have money. They didn't use money. And they seemed to have advanced knowledge, advanced technology. They were clearly not hungry. They lived in paradise. This part of the world is, you know, one of the most beautiful parts of the world you can find yourself in. And they didn't have money, and they lived in absolute abundance. And they were mining gold, and everything revolved around gold. And as long as they contributed towards their community, they were obviously well treated and well looked after, and they had everything. They lived a life of absolute bliss. Which is probably contrary to what people would consider, you know, slave species being working in gold mines and so forth, because that's really what it was. But it wasn't slavery in terms of whips and chains on the back, the way more modern slavery has been practiced. It was absolute slavery, but with it came absolute privilege as well at the same time. And so that led me to
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say they worked hard, but they had a good quality of life. And then you can look at the way things are going these days, and I think it's kind of upside down or backwards.
Well, so, exactly. And this is why contributionism was so obvious to me is that, you know, you don't have to work hard. You must do what you love to do, because we're all born with specific God-given talents. You know, we're human beings of flesh and blood with infinite souls. Each one of us has a very special, unique gift and talent that we are born with, and that's the talent and gift that we should be using through our lives to benefit the rest of our community and the rest of humanity. But that's been hijacked by a small group of royal political elite that abuse the situation for their own greed and their own benefit at the expense of everybody else. And this became very obvious to me. And so I created developed this philosophy called contributionism, and that evolved over now nearly 8 years into what I realized that the ancient African philosophy of Ubuntu is identical to what I came up with. And then I realized that, hold on, this is not just, you know, specific to Africa. All ancient cultures around the world shared that same philosophical principle, where people in communities worked together or worked towards the greatest benefit of all in their community. Whatever it was that they were doing, what they contributed wasn't for themselves, it was their contribution so that everybody else could benefit from their knowledge, their ability, their gift, their talent, whatever it is that they were contributing towards their community. And if everybody does that for just a few hours a day, you will end up with so much abundance that we won't know what to do with it. There'll be too much food, too much technology, too much free energy, too much science, too many bridges, too many rockets, you know, too many shoes. So it's just incredible. It's that simple. So, you know, that has led me to create what I call the Ubuntu Liberation Movement or Ubuntu Contributionism. And I also registered as a political party in South Africa. And I'm using what I learn in my research into ancient cultures and applying that in
into everyday solutions. Life.
Yeah, and finding solutions for what is an untenable situation that we all find ourselves in.
Well, I think it's a conversation that I hope goes very wide globally. It's like we, the more advanced we are, the further behind we get. And I work in a very parallel philosophy, and we work here to help people with animals without really using any drugs. We use our skills as healers and energy aware people, and also the energies from the earth, which really has pulled me your direction, and learning from some of the science that you've produced, and I stand back in total amazement when you start talking about civilizations that are predate, we'll put it this way, predate the written word of the Bible. And then you get into Sitchin's work with the Sumerian texts, and then there's all these other discoveries that are going on, and they all tend to go back in time. And I was looking at some of the photography. I believe it was in, I think it was in Adam's calendar, and I think there was a couple in the Temple of the African Gods, where you have the shape of a stone bird. And that shape seems to haunt my memory and takes a parallel journey up into the findings of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. And then the rune writings that you have disclosed down in the stone circles, and I think they were at your museum, and then that takes you all the way up into other discoveries up into Europe with the parallel of these old written languages that people are just really interested in trying to translate and figure out what the messages were. Now, you were mentioning that Stonehenge is very old, older than the stone circles. Do you find that there's any correlation in the construction or any of the artifacts that you have found around your stone circles and any, say, of Stonehenge or getting up into the Middle East? Is there any connections?
Well, the only connection that there is, and that's the common denominator with all ancient structures, every single one you'll find, the common denominator is sound frequency and resonance. They are all built with resonance and sound frequency in mind and probably used as a tool to construct it for levitation, for shaping the stones, for putting them in place, for molding them together. And, you know, with sound frequency and sound resonance, since that seems to be the source of all things in the universe, the Om or the primordial source, the sound of God, before even light came out of that, you know. So sound came first and seemed to create the manifest, the physical shape and everything that we find in the physical projected universe that we find ourselves in. And so it's that's definitely the Stonehenge is, but most definitely a very powerful energy generating and a resonating device. But just to, so people know what I'm talking about, the fact that I say it's very old, all you need to do is look at the breaks on the stones, and the best example is the one very tall stone in the middle of Stonehenge that used to be a twin of the other one that is still standing up, and the one of the two tall stones has fallen over and broken. Where it broke, the erosion on that break is so severe that it doesn't even look like the same stone anymore. So, you know, the geology won't lie to you. Unfortunately, our historians and archaeologists with hidden agendas or personal agendas, they'll make up any story, but they miss the obvious thing staring us in the face. And I'm astounded that I've never heard anyone mention that before until I went to Stonehenge myself in 2010. And then I presented this in Glastonbury to a packed auditorium of people that jumped up and gave me a rousing standing ovation, because I had the guts to stand up and say Stonehenge is probably more than a million years old. And, well, the geology tells us that, so we can't argue with that, you know?
Yeah, it sometimes nature, I find nature gives us very simple paths and very simple answers, and man tends to get in the middle and make it rather complicated. So that was pretty cool. My hat is off to you. You have really stood up and taken the bull by the horn. Just, I don't know whether you were a rebel, born to be a rebel, or your path of just being inquisitive and wanting to present the truth from an organic perspective is the impetus here, but you've really stirred up a lot of people's ways of thinking and the ability to connect and reach out and touch. And people are looking for this type of information. A lot of the people I work with are mainstream, and they just do not have a clue or even know where to start. And so your research is striking the hearts of a lot of people and bringing them closer to finding out who they are and maybe broadening their understanding of how to search. And I don't know. I'm going to give this an idea to you and see how you feel about it. Would you be interested in or have time to do a little more of this conversation? Because we have some extra time at the end of the show if you'd like.
Patricia, if we could set up another time, I'd appreciate it. Reason is I've been busy with the banks. that's the other journey that my father's taken, and I'm part of a small group of people in South Africa that are taken on the banks. And yesterday was a really hectic day energetically, and it really completely drained me, and I didn't sleep much last night. Plus, tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up early. I've got an interview with George Noory. And for 3 hours, so I've got to go and get some rest. So I'd love to chat to you again, but if we can schedule another time, that'll definitely probably be better for me, because my brain is a little fried at the moment.
That there is no problem there. So now I just want to make sure that people really, really know how to find you. And if anybody is interested in going and taking a trip to South Africa and actually experiencing the stone circles firsthand, how do they do that? Do they reach you and organize it that way? How does it happen?
Yeah, just go onto my website, michaeltillinger.com. And you can go onto the tour. I think there's a section that talks about the tours. Or just email me, and I'll put you in touch with Adele or Louise to organize a tour for you to Adam's Calendar and the Stone Circles. And then also check out the Ubuntu Party website, the contributionism website. That's ubuntuparty.org.za. And Ubuntu is U-B-U-N-T-U. And because you'll find some fascinating bits of writing that I've put there, all to do with unified communities that work together for the greatest benefit of all. It is such a beautiful message for the times that we live in, these desperate times where people are so desperately looking for a way out of this miserable existence that we find ourselves in. Just every week, every month, it gets harder and tougher, and the authorities are just turning on the screws and turning on the pressure, and they're just trying to, you know, screw us into the ground and grind us down in every possible way. And there is a simple way out. It's so simple. It totally boggles the mind.
I think reaching out on a worldwide scale opens up a lot of possibilities for change. And I would really, really encourage our listeners to follow through. If your heart takes you there, don't be afraid to ask questions. You might find some amazing answers. Thank you, Michael, so much for your time. And I'll be knocking on your door again. Best of luck with all that is on your schedule. And I'll look forward again to touching base. So I guess it's time for us to say thanks for listening. This has been ESA Logic Radio and Patricia Cleveland. If you need to find me, check it out at the Balanced Horse Project or bphcleveland@gmail.com. Bye for now. Enjoy your day.
It can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to me.